The Around the NFL Podcast won a Stitcher Award, I think. Where the hell is that thing?
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hentges, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
What is happening?
What a day.
It was a big day.
The two best games delivered, Giants and Panthers, Steelers and Broncos, and it had to have been the chippiest, scrummiest day of the season.
Wes, all fired up.
Well, plus the afterglow from the Dan Hentges Christmas party is strong. Everyone just in a happy, merry mood after that.
Yes. Yes, it was great to have all you guys at the party. Hey, by the way, Bob Costas just came up on the halftime show. I'm sure he had some heat about ODB. We're going to have to get into that. Odell Beckham, one of the main subplots. I was hoping that Bob would scale to the top of the soapbox and shout from the rooftops.
Well, it's very possible to happen.
Yeah. So, that was a major subplot of the game of the week. But the Panthers are still undefeated. Spoiler alert. I'm going to throw it out there right off the top of the show. So that is, we're entering historic territory now. A lot coming up on today's show. We will talk about that game. We will talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, who are quietly, or maybe not so quietly anymore, but they are now heading towards their own big streak. They could roll into the playoffs on a 10-game winning streak. They've won now 8 in a row. We'll talk about that. And, of course, Sunday Night Football, the team of Around the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals, playing the Philadelphia Eagles with big playoff ramifications for both sides. A lot to talk about, Greg, in the National Football League.
Well, it's week 15. I should hope so. It didn't look like a great slate on paper. Maybe the worst all season. But you're right, Wes. The games themselves delivered.
Does it bother you at all, Greg, because you are the master of tiebreakers and playoff scenarios, that the way things are shaking out in each conference, it's not too crazy. It's not as many teams in the mix where you could show off your skill set.
That so doesn't bother me.
The boss is no longer needed.
I want a lot of scenarios so that I can really show up. Yeah, the NFC is very simple. The AFC, there's a couple different things to explain.
Permutations.
A lot of possible ties. You know, we'll get into all that.
Greg asked me tonight to write the NFC playoff picture. I could write it in the next 15 minutes if I needed to.
Let's challenge
during
you.
The
during
show?
Not exactly mysterious, yeah.
That would be actually fun if we just carry it on with the podcast as Mark banged away some copy, and then we could read it at the end of the show. Do you want to do it?
No, pass.
Okay. Just an idea. A lot of good stuff to get to, a lot of football to talk about with the heroes. So let's get into it. Why not? And we'll start with, of course, the Carolina Panthers, who, yes, spoiler alert, I already let the cat out of the bag. They remain unbeaten. Ron Rivera's team blew a 28-point second-half lead against the Giants, but a Graham Gano field goal in the final seconds secured a 38-35 win. Carolina is now 14-0. Only the Falcons and Bucks left on that schedule, Greg. They stay perfect, and Odell Beckham lost his damn mind. What a day.
This was the chance for the Panthers to lose. The fact that you could somehow blow a 28-point lead out of nowhere through a variety of defensive letdowns and just bad luck, a blocked field goal, and yet Cam Newton gets the ball with under 2 minutes to go, and he does the two things he's been doing all year, just fireball slants over the middle, and then two runs for first downs, sets up the game-winning field goal, clinched the MVP. It's all over. They're going 16-0, and he's getting the hardware.
I love the contrast between him and Odell Beckham, where Beckham acts like a fool all game, scores a touchdown, does the Allen Iverson walk all over Josh Norman.
Step over.
And it, camera pans over to Cam Newton, shakes his head like, all right, I see you. Now go watch what I'm about to do with the game on the line.
He said, Cam even said it in the post-game interview with Aaron Andrews, that they were so ticked off with how Beckham carried on. And Beckham, it set him back a long way in public opinion, I think, because he just handled himself poorly. But Newton was so ticked that he said the only thing he was upset about after the game is that they didn't score a touchdown to win because they really wanted to stick it to Beckham after what he had done.
Wow. I mean, Beckham, too, is, if you want to give him any credit, he gets into all these skirmishes with Josh Norman throughout the game. In theory, maybe Norman sort of went after him a little early on one play, and then Beckham kept going again and again. I blame the officials for for not throwing penalties in the first quarter. He should have had two personal fouls in the first quarter. He didn't have any. He ended up with four penalties in the game. That's the most for any receiver in 15 years. Three of them were personal fouls. I think that the official set the tone by not throwing the flag early. If you want to give Beckham any credit, who had a really poor game, no catches in the first half, he did come up with the two monster catches in the drive that ties up the game to set up that big Cam Newton moment.
That's true. I mean, he did show some resilience. But it even after he scored the touchdown, like Wes said, the step over, it was like, calm down, Odell. And when he launched himself into Josh Norman's helmet, I mean, how do you not get kicked out of the game? That was just, I mean, that was a terrible job by Odell Beckham. You're supposed to be.
He tackled him on another play?
Yeah, the young shining sun of New York sports, the successor to Jeter. And you're acting like a total... I can't even say it.
Well, we're weeks removed from him kicking the ball in another game, and I can't think of a player who is this talented, but this has been going on for all season. When you talk to people that deal with him, he is not well-regarded by his peers. Mm. And we talk about this downstairs. Maybe there's the jealousy aspect of that to his quickly rising star, but he does not seem to be like well-respected, and a lot of people point to his toughness, too.
Well, that's the thing. I think it hurt his team on the field today, his lack of, I don't know if you want to call it toughness, but his sensitivity. Composure. They got into his head, and he hurt his team.
Books out.
He should have been, he's the best player on the team, and he should have been ejected many times, so that would have hurt his team even more. He dropped an easy touchdown in the first half, dropped another pass, and he was in
Let's
his head.
Let's not act like Josh Norman shut him down, as I saw on Twitter for most of the day. Even when he had no catches in the first half, he was getting open and should have had a long touchdown.
He also wasn't against Josh Norman most of the day. I mean, most of his catches were from the slot. He plays a lot from the slot. I don't know if this was more than usual, but Cortland Finnegan and a safety were on him a lot of the
game. This game was 35-7.
It was over.
It is outrageous what happened. This is against a team, and you got to give the Giants credit for battling back in this game. Another heartbreaking loss for them is how it ends up. But to come back against a team that's 13-0, tie it up. But then that's why, and I agree, now Newton to me is the clear-cut favorite for MVP. That he, you know, once the game was tied, it could have gotten away with him. He just let him coolly right down the field, and they win the game.
Yeah, I mean, that
MVP
was...
MVP stuff.
That was absolutely like a signature moment from Cam in a season where he's had 40 signature moments. But are you concerned at all about the fact that they gave up that 28 unanswered points? Or is that at this... You're going to have to win games so many different ways that right. We look past it and they move right on into the playoffs. They're the best team in the NFC.
Aren't we picking nits on an undefeated team?
No, I think so. I
am not that concerned about it. I think each game has its own momentum. And when you get a big lead like that, there's always a danger.
Well, and it was a fluke, a blocked field goal. The game's over if it wasn't for a blocked field goal. There's another play that I'm forgetting by the Giants that was a little fluky in that comeback, but that's what you need. It was 35-7 late in the third. It wasn't like this was a comeback that started in the first half. It's crazy how fast this all happened. I will say, though, the Panthers have done this three times this season where they gave up huge leads in the Colts game, in the week before the Colts game, and now this one. So it's something in the playoffs you would think that's going to be on their mind if they get a big lead that they got to keep the foot on the gas. But Newton wins the MVP, especially on a day where they couldn't run the ball, but he could, 100 yards rushing. No Jonathan Stewart really hurt them.
The Panthers are probably going to go 16-0.
Yeah.
It's pretty remarkable what's happening here. This is it's historic, and I don't think anybody saw it coming. Even the Panthers fans that chirp, you know, coming after me and poor Connor changed his mind and picked against the Panthers again at the last moment. You know, I mean, you know, this is nobody expected this to happen. So the Panthers are two games away from joining some historic company. We move on to the Denver Broncos. Who
can I say one last thing
yes.
on Odell? We had a lot of people on Twitter ask if this was La Ravio Magnifico about who Odell Beckham is. I lean more towards he's an immature kid, seems to be pretty spoiled. He's had everything go his way throughout life. He has to use this as an opportunity to grow as a person and reflect on why he acted that way. Yeah. But I don't think it's like some character flaw.
So Wes says no to...
La Ravio Magnifico.
And from what we've heard after the game, it didn't sound like he was totally contrite yet. So he's got to figure some stuff out.
He's a very young man.
Yeah, he's a tremendously talented player, but he's got a way to go. He's got to grow up, right, Mark?
Yeah, he does. But I mean, I agree with Wes that if people were interviewing me and I was showboating around when I was 22, I'd probably have a few fixes as well. So he's very talented.
He's been told he's a god for about 18 straight months, and
right.
I think it's starting to come.
Not unlike anything in our lives, so we can't.
Yes,
we don't
exactly.
Know that.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about the Denver Broncos, who built an 18-point lead against the Steelers. And then they watched it all slip away. Antonio Brown's fourth quarter touchdown, one of 16 catches on the day, was the difference. A 34-27 comeback win for the Steelers at Heinz Field. Wes, the Steelers almost ruined their season on Sunday, but in the end, they retained the look of the AFC's most dangerous team.
I think they are the most dangerous team. Nobody wants to face the Steelers in January because I think, you know, you can point to the Seahawks or the Panthers. I think the Steelers are the hottest offense in the league right now. Mm. Nobody's stopping that wide receiver trio. And Chris Harris had been one of the best cornerbacks in the league, really specializes in stopping smaller, quicker wide receivers like Antonio Brown. And Brown had one of the best days of his career against Chris Harris. You cannot single cover him.
16
and the Broncos
for 189.
It was a game where you had the league's best wide receiver core going against arguably the best cornerback trio, and it lived up to the billing. Chris Harris fought hard, but Antonio Brown's just unstoppable.
That's Griff Whalen in Connor Madden world production.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown. I mean, that's Madden production. And I mean, when you look at his, can you even imagine if Roethlisberger never got hurt this season?
He might be closing
150 catches.
He'd be closing on 2,000 yards.
Wow.
And you might have a little competition for Cam and the MVP with Ben Roethlisberger,
who's thrown the ball as well as anybody this year.
I would like to look at wide receiver seasons like this and talk about it more as a duo than it is just their own production. He's easily one of the best that we've seen in a long time, but he wasn't this guy when Big Ben wasn't in the lineup. And I really think that Pittsburgh, after all the years with the consistency at quarterback and in the building up of the weapons around Big Ben, that you're exactly right. We've been saying it for weeks. If you have to deal with Pittsburgh early in the playoffs, if they sneak into this thing, that is going to be a train wreck if you're one of the top-seeded teams. This is not a fifth or sixth best team in the AFC.
Yeah, by the way, Ben put up the same numbers against the Seahawks a few weeks ago, too. I mean, he's doing this against respected defenses. He can put 40 points on any team in the playoffs.
Well, this score was 27-10 late in the third quarter. What was it, Wes, you think, that made this comeback happen? I mean, was it Denver's offense? What does it take to beat that defense? Because as great as this Broncos defense is, this is one of the performances of the year by any team to score 34 on this.
Yeah, I think we all hesitate to point to halftime adjustments, but the Steelers have blown so many coverages and assignments on defense in the first half, and they got that fixed at halftime. And they gave the Broncos six straight punts to open up the second half. Osweiler had a non-throwing shoulder injury, which may have been a factor. But basically, the Steelers started, you know, communicating on defense and stopped blowing their assignments, and the Broncos didn't adjust. While that was going on, Steelers' offense ran wild. Mm.
That's the thing about the Steelers. If you had a peaking Patriots or one of these NFC teams that has a powerhouse offense, you feel like you can score on the Steelers. They didn't have
much
of a pass rush in the first half. You give up that many points to Brock Osweiler, who's just going through one read and basically throwing it, then that's not a good sign for your defense. But right now, the AFC doesn't really have a juggernaut offense with the Patriots not playing like they
do. Well, except for Pittsburgh.
Right.
Here's Osweiler's numbers in this game. It was the tale of two quarterbacks. 14 of 18 for 218 and three touches in the first half. Second half, 7 of 22 for 82 yards and an interception. And, you know, as you know, I'm a Jets fan. I think the listeners know that. I think you guys know that. This was a game the Jets needed because the way things are breaking with the Steelers, Jets, and Chiefs, somebody's got to lose for the Jets to get it. And I thought this was money in the bank, 27-10, and Brock Osweiler looking like a guy that's never going to leave the starting lineup. So I have to do something that I did not want to do, guys.
Whoa. What is that? Stick a fork in them? That would be weird.
It's way more serious. I declare vengeance on Brock Osweiler.
You ought to declare vengeance on... Oh, sorry.
You're going to ask me?
Yeah, please.
What is that?
Why would you suggest that this needs to be done?
Or what does it mean?
What does it mean?
I'm sure there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions about this.
I don't know. But all I can tell you is this. I declare vengeance on Brock Osweiler. He let me down in a big spot. I will not forget it.
But maybe when this whole story is said and done, what if it's Denver who gets bumped out of the playoff spot with your Jets taking? That would be vengeance.
That is the most likely way for the Jets, I think, to get into the playoffs without a loss, is that the Broncos lose to Denver. I mean, lose to Cincinnati next week. And they're not, you know, that's certainly possible.
That is possible.
And all the teams win out. And the Jets then win a tiebreak over the Broncos for the sixth spot.
Can you?
And Denver's out of there.
Our boss downstairs, John Marvel, big Broncos fan. Can you even imagine if they free fall from the number one seed to out of the tournament?
At 11-5, too.
Well, you'd be fired as a Jets fan.
Well, yeah, that's true.
At 11-5, too, that would be heartbreaking for the Broncos. It's not like crazy things need to happen in this scenario. Denver can win their Week 17 game, lose to Cincinnati, and if the Jets and everyone wins out, they would be out of luck. I think the Jets, you know, toughest spot is really, you do have two tough games for the Jets.
Yeah,
we'll get to
that. There's nothing to assume with the Jets, but you hear the glee in Greg's voice when he starts digging in on those tiebreakers.
Well, this is, you're right.
Hey, that's his thing.
I'm so necessary.
Spot. I know, you got this. This is a good spot.
By the way, how about taking your vengeance out on Vernon Davis and Demaryius Thomas, who keep dropping passes in very big moments?
Vernon Davis, this is not a good contract year for Vernon Davis.
Oh, my God.
No,
that's back-to-back weeks where he might have cost his team the game in both weeks. You can make that argument.
That's true.
This is a team that was built around the idea of a dominant Peyton Manning, you know, taking this team deep into January. You make the quarterback switch, it is a coin flip. And in the best of worlds that Osweiler can come in and just keep him rolling. And he is a young quarterback learning in a tough place to play in Pittsburgh that is not easy to do.
Well, you do figure with that defense, they would have taken that scenario that their defense can close out that game. That's their signature side of the ball, not being able to close it. And we thought Brock Osweiler was helping the running game a lot. And yet last week, that was not the case. This week, C.J. Anderson was hurt again or was not really on the field almost at all. Ronnie Hillman didn't do much of anything. They're not running the ball well.
All right, so let's move on. There's more to talk about in the AFC playoff picture, Greg. You could keep on digging in on what's going on right now, because let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, who have now won 8 consecutive games after taking care of business, a 34-14 win over the decimated Ravens in Baltimore. KC clinched the game on a 90-yard pick 6 late in the game. Their league-leading 6th defensive touchdown of the year. Kansas City now 9-5. They are owner of, is it the 5th seed, Greg? Right now, they are in the 5th seed. They are, you know, within striking distance now of the Broncos. So you can start talking about that division as something that's a little wide open. Mm. But most importantly for Kansas City, a team that hasn't had playoff success in many years, they are now in really good position with a soft schedule to close this out and maybe even go into the playoffs on a 10-game winning streak. Who saw that coming?
Wes, other than Wes, not many.
I did not see that.
We stuck a fork in them, so no one saw that coming.
It's one thing for, I'm trying to think of, what are the chances the Chiefs win this division? It's got to be close to 50-50, right?
Well, I think it's probably about 30%, essentially. It's got to be a little less than 50-50, because you give the Broncos at least a 50-50 chance of winning next week against Cincinnati. And then Kansas City would have to take care of business.
Broncos' defense played really well in the first half today. It's one thing for Ben Roethlisberger to kind of shred them as an experienced quarterback playing at home. It's another for A.J. McCarron to go into Denver and beat them. I don't know. That defense is really good.
Andy Reid's one of the best coaches in the NFL, and no one will ever likes calling him that because he's, you know.
I thought you didn't like calling him that.
No, I've always been an Andy Reid guy. Not in terms of game management or anything, but that he's one of the coaches that I think has proven over time that he's going to win more games than he loses. He's going to help your team win games. Team is better with Andy Reid. And there's only so many coaches that's true about.
Yeah, I mean, and I think probably around the horn here, none of us look at the Chiefs and love the way they're built. If you really wanted to root for a team in today's version of the NFL. Alex Smith is who he is, but bottom line, I mean, what they've done is pretty much unprecedented. Teams don't do this with the way they are built. And Kansas City right now, they go and they play Cleveland next week. That's pretty much a guaranteed victory. They've almost earned a playoff spot at this point. And I don't
got
see
Oakland
where
it week 17.
Stops.
Here's the thing.
You never know.
One thing I'll say, because
they don't have Justin.
I've watched both of their last 2 weeks. I've watched these games, and the Chargers, they barely hung on to beat the Chargers. 10-3 win. Chargers at the goal line. Mike McCoy would have went for 2 if they would have scored 2. He said later that was a bummer. And then this week, if you watch this game, guys, you will see that despite the final score, this game was not a mismatched team. This is the Ravens hanging with him. What does the total yardage say?
Ravens outgained them by almost 90 yards.
What happened was the Ravens, because they've been hit by so many injuries, they're a bad team this year. Because of that, they made some crucial mistakes. And because the Chiefs have been so opportunistic this season, they banged them every time. And that's led to the differential in scoring. But the Chiefs aren't playing lights out football the last 2 weeks. And I know, Mark, you said that because the Browns are terrible. We know that. I don't look past the Browns.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs can get picked off either of these last 2 weeks.
Well, all right. I don't look past the Browns, but the Chiefs are also taking care of business. And, I mean, Baltimore, like, despite their record, is another very well-coached team. I know with all the injuries, John Harbaugh has done an excellent job this season, even though the record doesn't show it.
I'll tell you one thing about John Harbaugh. John, come back to us. 4th-and-9 on your own 17, and you call a fake punt run?
Early in the game, too, when they're down 14-7.
He's operating with a JV team right now.
And I know you're wearing yellow pants, mustard yellow pants. It's like, I don't even know what's going on in Baltimore right now. They're just, like, saying, what the hell, and just, you know, pretending like it's a preseason game.
What is up with the pants?
I
didn't see that until after the game, and I, you know, listen.
You can watch on YouTube.
Baltimore's uniforms have never been the worst issue, but it became one today.
Who's the best team the Chiefs have beaten on this streak?
Denver?
That's a great question.
So they beat Denver. Who's the second best team? They're not facing quality.
Pittsburgh and Landry Jones.
Pittsburgh with Landry Jones is not a good team.
But then it's Denver.
That is a fair point. But to go,
Buffalo.
To go win, reel off wins.
Oh, that's impressive. I don't want to take it. I'm thinking more about who am I going to pick once the playoffs start.
They were up 29-0 against Denver. Granted, that was Peyton Manning's, you know, disaster game. But that's a pretty impressive performance.
These are their wins. Steelers, Lions, Broncos, Chargers, Bills, Raiders, Chargers, Ravens.
Well, that's
not a murderer. But,
no, yeah, they're taking care of business.
But it would be if they ever bumped Pittsburgh. It's like some tiebreaker scenario where we get the Chiefs instead of Pittsburgh. I think that's disappointing.
Well, we could get Pittsburgh at Kansas City. Very possible.
Revenge game.
All right. So the Steelers win. The Chiefs win. Let's now go back to Saturday night, where the Jets flirted with disaster throughout their matchup against the Cowboys, but a 40-yard field goal from Randy Bullock was the difference, a 19-16 win at Jarrow World for the Jets. Ryan Fitzpatrick led Gangrene to 10 points in his final two possessions, salvaging a day for the Jets where they seem to be going into same old Jets mode. And Fitzmagic, that's the only reason they won this game. He woke up, the offense woke up, and they took care of business despite the win. And, Greg, I can say this. The Jets win Saturday night for the fourth straight week, but then will wake up Monday morning out of the playoffs because of the two wins that we just talked about. So the Jets 9-5 outside looking in, but they are lucky to be 9-5 because this game nearly got away with them. Wes, you wrote this game up. For NFL.com. Jets did flirt with disaster, didn't they?
They didn't look like a playoff team when they were committing penalties, making special teams mistakes. Both lines are getting pushed around by Dallas's lines, and they can't stop Kellen Moore with the game on the line for a game-tying field goal drive. But they did look like they had a playoff quarterback. Mm. You have to give Ryan Fitzpatrick credit for coming through with the game on the line.
He didn't play a great three quarters, I would say, and he played an absolutely amazing fourth quarter. And it's very similar to the game he had against the Giants, where they were quiet, and when they absolutely needed him, he just led them right down the field.
They, Rich Cimini, ESPN's Jet Beat reporter, been covering the team forever. He made a good point in something he wrote yesterday, that early in the season, this was an offense that was, you know, driving through Chris Ivory. But what's happened, Chan Gailey, is he's come to trust Fitzpatrick. He's handed the offense to the quarterback, and it's Fitzpatrick that's making the plays. They, you know, Ivory is still, you know, a threat in the backfield, but he's come down to earth a little bit.
You should be thrilled with that, because that's how teams win, is when the quarterback.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think anybody, and just like the Panthers fans, never could have thought they would be 14-0 in late December. Jets fans would have never thought Fitzpatrick could be anything more than a serviceable game manager, but instead, he is their best quarterback since Chad Pennington in 2003.
Yeah, and I have no problem with New York winning a few games very ugly down the stretch, because we've seen that they've hung with teams week after week. I really do think that they are playoff worthy at this point. Fitzpatrick has been playing out of his mind three games in a row, and that's usually the knock on the Jets, is you're going to get there, but it's going to be with clunky quarterback play. And you got to give, and I know, Greg, earlier in the season, Fitzpatrick wasn't maybe hitting it on all cylinders in your book, but he is doing what's needed right now. And the greatest thing about this game, though, was being on a group text message with Dan, where the roller coaster, and I don't blame you, because you're the DNA of a Jets fan is expecting the worst, but you've got to be proud of what they did. Yes, the tiebreaker thing tonight is not in your court, but they have a chance if they beat the Patriots to really, really, you're the only guy in the preseason that said they'd make the playoffs in this group.
I thought they would win 9 or 10 games. Now they're at 9. I won sandwiches off it. Greg, we got to talk about your sandwich situation
in grim.
A little bit. But
I was due.
Yeah, but
take a turn.
I think what the Jets are in a position right now. I even wrote about it this weekend that the Jets. You always think that same old Jets game is right around the corner, and this one was perfectly set up. And they did not let it get away. They let Rex Ryan come into their building on Thursday night and pull the same old Jets. But this team, 4 or 5 weeks later, is winning this type of game. And that you feel good about that and you like what the coach
I thought the biggest moment of the game was Eric Decker going down in a heap. And right after that, he lost the fumble. And during that commercial break, you and many other Jets fans were saying that, I was watching Twitter, maybe you didn't tweet at that moment, but the season's over, Eric Decker's out. They come back from the commercial break. Eric Decker's fine. He didn't fumble the ball. It's Jets' ball. Yeah. Everything's going the Jets' way. It's fine.
Two plays. That play, a split second. It was the right call when they, stuck with the call that he didn't fumble. And then on the go-ahead touchdown or field goal at the end, Fitzpatrick nearly fumbled. Again, a split-second differential. Yeah. That replay showed that he did not fumble. He fumbled after his knee was down. So, yeah, make no mistake, the Jets were fortunate. If they would have lost to T.J. Yates and Kellen Moore in the same season,
well, then you don't deserve it. Right.
I'm out of football. I quit.
There is no bigger Browns fan in the room than Dan Hanses because the Jets' next two games are the Chiefs and the Steelers.
There are some avenues here, but we need to – I'm going to do some coach speak here. Can only worry about what's right in front of you. We got the Patriots coming up this week.
Well, that's a pretty big thing in front of you. So.
Exactly.
Do you want to notice when I was writing this recap? The white surrender flag going up at the Rosenthal household. What? On Matt Castle versus Darren McFadden.
Oh.
Greg gets a flag at his
rough
household.
Time. It was a good run for Matt Castle. 7th round pick who never played a lick in college. Had a nice career. Yeah. Made a lot of money. 1 year too long, him getting starts. He would have been fine as a second or third string. You never saw
Greg, you have a flagpole in your Santa Monica yard. That's news to
you. Yeah, we're not really.
That's too common, man. There's no flagpole.
We're not religious, but we go to Castle every week.
Wes, we saw something magical, too, with Matt Castle, didn't we?
Never before seen. It's new to the football cognoscenti.
Yes.
The intentional grounding interception.
Love it.
Yeah, that was.
How can it be intentional grounding if it never hits the ground?
There was no Dallas receiver within, 20 yards?
You almost think like the official should have picked up the flag because just not to embarrass Matt Castle, be like, it's a turnover anyway. We don't have to drop the hammer on it.
Yeah, and I'm where Dan was a week ago, which is, you know what? It's not even fair to make fun of Matt Castle at this point because at this point he needs to seamlessly shift into a telemarketing job or something. He's done with this. It's over.
I don't think he needs the money.
Well, he might need, you never know. Keep working.
Craziest stat from this game.
Yes.
Adrian Peterson's the only running back with more 100-yard rushing games than Darren McFadden, who didn't start until about Halloween.
It's kind of a weird year for running backs.
It is, definitely.
A lot of guys that you wouldn't think are like second in the league in rushing, third in the league. I don't think there's going to be a 1,600-yard rusher this year.
Doug Martin's having a pretty monster all-pro type season. But it's Doug Martin, a guy who was practically out of the league, it felt like, 2 years ago.
All right, moving on. Meanwhile, on the throne of ease, how great is life for the Patriots? The NFL gave them another bye week Sunday in the form of a home
literally
matchup.
Literally the same team the Jets played a week ago.
Don't dig in on logic. In the form of a home matchup against the lifeless Titans, Tom Brady threw 2 touchdowns, one of them to Gronk, and New England trotted on their winning pony, Thoroughbred, trotted to a 33-16 win. One problem for the Pats, though, Greg, injuries continue to be an issue.
Patrick Chung, Dante Hightower, who else am I forgetting?
Danny Amendola.
Danny Amendola got knocked out of this game. I think there's real concern about the toll that the injuries are taking. And I think you saw it in a game where the Patriots only had, 340 yards of offense against Tennessee?
Yeah, but that was
33 points.
They took their foot off the gas pedal at halftime with a 24-3 lead. Brandon LaFell had his best game of the season, if you want to take any positives away. And the backfield trio without LeGarrette Blount combined for 182 yards. And that doesn't even include a 70-yard catch and run that James White had called back on penalty.
Can you name their leading rusher today?
Joey Yusefa.
Came off the practice squad, a fullback.
Joey Yusefa. 14 carries for
bowled over one
yards.
Titans defender.
What's going on?
Well, that
here?
Leads credence to the idea that they could plug in anyone at this point, and he's suddenly an NFL contributor.
the Patriots, I believe, Greg, NFL record, sixth straight season now with a bye in the first round of the playoffs.
Yes, that is a record. The previous one was
congratulations.
Four. Thanks. And six straight years with 12 wins or more. And it points out something that people don't seem to recognize, that this era, the Gronk era Patriots, in terms of the regular season, are far and away better than any of the runs when they were winning the titles early on.
Well, that makes sense, though, because you're a decade later in the team-building process, and there's not a more cohesive franchise in sports, and you want to look back to when they went 9-7 or whatever it was after winning their first Super Bowl.
Sure.
They're not going to do that at this point, not the way they're built, not with Gronk on the team, sure.
You know, and most of the injuries are coming in the secondary or on offense, but this front seven, what they did in the first half, they knocked the other team's starting quarterback out of the game. They allow 58 yards, one third down conversion, and 2 yards per play in the first half of this game.
I don't think it's a big deal. Mariota, though, played his worst towards the end of the year. If this is all we see of him, is a sprained knee. Looked like he could have maybe come back in.
I think he could have.
We don't know if he'll play again, but he has taken on a little bit of water late in the year. If all you had watched were his late season games, you would have a different feel of him holding the ball too long, taking a lot of sacks and fumbling the ball a lot.
I mean, it's not a shock, though, because I think it's a contribution of you haven't been healthy probably in months if you're Marcus Mariota. You talked about it, Weston. There's not a lot of weapons. There's no run game. The defense is starting to look at itself in a different way, as Dan mentioned last week. And what are you with the Titans at this point? I mean, you've also playing the longest season of your life if you're a first-year pro.
This was a pass protection issue. This was not a Mariota issue.
And meanwhile, on the throne of sleaze, this from the Boston Globe, the Patriots, in an unusual departure from NFL practice, have created a revenue stream for a private business owned by their franchise quarterback, Tom Brady, and a partner who faced federal sanctions after falsely presenting himself as a medical doctor and deceptively promoting nutritional supplements. Answer to it, Greg! Answer to it!
Wait, so you're saying the guy that makes Tom Brady's smoothies once said he was a doctor?
Guy's like, I got water that makes concussions go away, Tommy.
What do I care? Whatever gets the job done. Whatever makes Tommy believe he's Tom Brady,
it's more an issue, maybe. Apparently, that all this talk, Tom Brady, he signs these cap-friendly deals. He only cares about winning. They got all these backroom dealings where he's getting money funneled in other places. Loophole Central!
Wow. You know, Dan, I am all on board with your idea to look for certain reasons to potentially have issues with the Patriots, but that is not working for me.
By the way, since people come to this podcast for tiebreak info, I've done some work. If the Patriots and Bengals tie, if the Jets, for instance, beat the Patriots next week, Patriots and Bengals tie at 13-3, most likely Patriots still get the one seed.
You're the best in the business.
Get the smile on Greg's face.
Yeah, the
best
in the business.
Nothing puts a bounce in his step like playoff permutation.
If it was up to you, it would be week 15 every day, because every year, always something to talk about, permutations.
Greg's Groundhog Day, a disastrous film.
All right. Let us move on to the Cincinnati Bengals, the aforementioned Bengals. A.J. McCarron is off to a good start as a starter for Cincinnati. The second-year quarterback did not have a turnover, and Cincinnati took advantage of San Francisco errors. A 24-14 win, clinching another playoff berth for Marvin Lewis. He goes to January every year, love him or hate him. Greg, with the Steelers surging, this was a must-win for the Bengals. They got it done.
They did, and A.J. McCarron, you know, by all accounts, looked pretty good in the game. Looked good enough to win.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked last week that if you're A.J. McCarron and you're the Bengals and you need a week to kind of get your act together and find out where his boundaries are, what he can do, perfect opponent. I mean, the 49ers are cooked at this point. They are absolutely cooked. And the Bengals, they came in and took care of business.
Nine yards per attempt.
McCarron did fine. He looked fine.
And this is what he had last week,
Took a little while for them to get going. The run game didn't do a lot. But just the fact that he's the quarterback and they're up 21-0 at halftime, it lends credence to what Damashek was saying, this week, which is it's maybe not that big a difference. Not that big a deal. We'll see when they start playing a better team like Denver next week. But
is it not a big deal?
I've seen that floated around that it might even be an upgrade to AJ McCarron. No, disrespect to Andy Dalton. I gotta check that on the side.
Right. I get the idea though that they're a good enough team with good enough coaches, and McCarron's a good enough backup that they can coach around it and still be a really good team.
Against the 49ers.
Yeah, well, and we'll see next week.
Hugh Jackson's a great schemer and play caller. He's got the right help there, and like you said, the surrounding talent. But it's one thing to do it against the 49ers. It's another thing to go into Denver next week and not face plant.
Well, and last year in that game against the Broncos when Cincinnati won on primetime, it had a lot to do with their defensive backfield, and their defense has to probably carry the way at this point for the passing game. That's not going to be the same. I would absolutely dismiss the idea that Andy Dalton is not a factor in this offense and that AJ McCarron can step right in and just do what he did. But Hugh Jackson showed confidence in what I love. I think Hugh Jackson has got to be your number one coaching candidate at this point. If you're okay with what the rest of Hugh Jackson brings, it doesn't matter what's happened to this
team.
What does
the rest of
him
bring?
What the rest of who?
You say that as long as you're okay with what he brings, what does
well,
that
he's not,
mean?
He's not going to be given
Jackson,
the green light
mean,
like, to trade
his,
for
right, Hugh coaches. Jackson, I think, is maybe not probably the easiest personality for certain teams to take on if they want to hire a head coach, but whatever. That's not the main point here.
One other thing with Cincinnati, and they need – McCarron is a limited guy. He's a young quarterback. The good thing about them is that they're such a good, balanced team, so the defense can pick up the slack. They need better play from their running backs. I know Jeremy Hill got in the end zone twice, but he went 19 for 31. Gio Bernard went 14 for 33. Neither of them had a run longer than 10 yards. So, you know, this is a team to me is going to be vulnerable as long as McCarron's there. Dalton is just a superior player. But this was such an important win because, and we talked about this on Thursday, if you would have stubbed your toe here and, you know, things, he throws a pick six or something happens and somehow the Niners steal that and the Steelers surging, a little sense of panic can come into that building. But now you're okay. You're going to the playoffs. Maybe win one more game, you should be fine, and away we go.
Yeah, to win the division. And next week's game is just massive against Denver. We said with the Broncos, they could fall right out of the playoffs. They could lose the division if they lose that game. And for the Bengals,
let's go AJ
it's
McCarron.
Like, it's like getting that playoff win for the Bengals. I know it doesn't count as a playoff win, but it gets them to the final eight, and it gets them a home game in the final eight if they can beat Denver. So that is just a massive game.
Let's move on. Never, ever, ever, ever trust the Jaguars. Jacksonville got a free-falling Falcons team in their building on Sunday, and they could not take care of business. They lose 23-17, a Falcons victory. I think the Falcons had lost, what, five in a row?
255 in a row.
255 consecutive losses. That streak is over. Wes, the Falcons keep their faint playoff hopes alive, and the Jaguars inch closer to another dark January. They have no one to blame but themselves.
Yeah, their defense. I mean, as exciting as we think their offense is, Blake Bortles is making too many mistakes on a weekly basis, game-changing mistakes, and their defense can't stop anyone. This Falcons offense was reeling. Julio Jones and Matt Ryan picked them apart. And I think the Falcons have they would need a miracle to get in the playoffs, but the Jaguars also need a miracle because
And Blake Bortles, by the way, buddy, I've seen this now at least three times this season. You can't throw the ball past the line of scrimmage. Once you pass the line of scrimmage, that's a rule, right?
That call got overturned.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Still, don't do it.
I thought you were going to pick on him for the throw he had, the interception into the end zone going into halftime, which changed the entire complexion of the game.
I saw in your write-up, Wes, you had a good tweet from Billick. Blake Bortles is like the power hitter in baseball that crushes home runs but also strikes out way too many times. So he's a Rob Deere at this point of his life.
He is. He has more completions of 20 yards than any quarterback in the league, but he doesn't sustain drives long enough or consistently enough.
It's disappointing. We were excited, and we'll get to the AFC South championship game earlier today that was, you know, one of the worst games of the day still was the most important in terms of the playoffs if you really want to get down to it. And the Jaguars had a golden opportunity. They've had a bunch here down the stretch. The game against the Titans they could have won. This game, for sure. If they had just won this game, their scenarios to win the next two in the division were not crazy because you get to face the Texans right coming up, and you could have just gotten into that first place, but they couldn't do it. They couldn't beat a team that hadn't won in 2 months.
And we probably were more excited about the Jaguars a week ago than we were the Chiefs, and that's really what's not fair, because it's hard to go do what Kansas City's done when you look at an incomplete team like Jacksonville that cannot string two wins together. When if you come into this season knowing what your opportunity would be in week 15 in this crappy division and you can't get it done, it is on you.
You know who's having quietly another monstrous statistical season is Julio Jones. Started out, obviously, he started out really fast, and then he kind of went into a lull, and Matt Ryan was a big reason why. But now you look up, 118 catches, almost 1,600 yards, 7 touchdowns is kind of pedestrian, but this guy is a monster. You got to build around him and get Matt Ryan back on track.
He broke Roddy White's single-season franchise record for receptions this week, and next week he's going to break his record set last year for yards in a season. I mean, he's having a great year.
This Falcons team is 7-7 with two home games coming up. They're basically right where you would think they would be. It just has been a wayward way to get there.
Well, if they somehow find themselves into the playoff picture at the end, I'm done.
It's not going to happen.
Okay.
You're out.
I don't know what that means, but I would not be excited about having
You should declare
that.
Vengeance.
Well, they'd have to beat Carolina next week start. That would be one way.
Only way to declare vengeance, though, is...
Vengeance on the Falcons.
Yeah,
take 2 weeks off.
Yeah, you need to need to verbally make it clear, because that puts it on the books. So just whenever you're ready for it.
I might be. I mean, I think they're going to declare vengeance on themselves. They probably won't need me involved here. They're going to get it done.
That sounds depressing, declaring vengeance on yourself. Let's move on. We keep rolling. Yes, the AFC South. This really could have decided, and you know, who knows how this division will end up shaking out. But Texans, Colts at, I was about to say the RCA Dome, which really showed my age. It's the Lucas Oil Stadium. But the Texans won in Indy for the first time in franchise history. And they have who to thank for it, Mark?
Whedon, Brandon.
Yes, really. The much maligned quarterback replaced an injured TJ Yates and led Houston to all of their points, a 16-10 win over the Colts. This is the Texans, a team without Arian Foster on its fourth quarterback. Mm. Leads the AFC South with 2 weeks to play. Sizzler, Bill O'Brien for president?
Well, I mean, of course he should be put in the presidential consideration after what he's done. You know, with Yates going out, were they just to get Jason Campbell off the street as a little QB insurance? They recreate that magical Browns quarterback room from 2013. So, yes, B.O.B. for president.
You're fired.
Happy for Brandon Whedon. Maybe he gets another few years of employment out of
it. I said the same thing to Mark downstairs, because this guy, he's bad. He's not a good quarterback, but he also seems like a decent guy. And you just want him to have a couple moments where he can, at least be somebody that's not remembered as a laughingstock, you know?
Well, and who thought that he would, by years, outlast potentially Trent Richardson's career? But when you're a quarterback and you do what he does...
What an achievement.
Well, I don't know, but I'm saying when they were drafted, it would be ultra depressing.
That was a good draft, by the way, Mark.
For who?
For the Browns.
Oh, yeah. That was just an amazing collection of talent they brought in.
I watched a lot of this game, and this... we'd have to really search for a worse game and two worse teams that had such a major, major playoff implication. I know we're
the
like...
AFC South,
I know
everyone.
We're joking about it, but it's really a next-level thing when Charlie Whitehurst is in the game because Matt Hasselbeck just keeps getting knocked around. Hasselbeck eventually finished the game. And then you have Whedon, who's replacing TJ Yates. And it's 10-6 because of the Colts. It felt like the Colts' 10-3 lead was insurmountable. And I think it was really set up by a defensive score or a turnover. And just watching, it's depressing, thinking one of these teams are going to be in there instead of the Jets or the Steelers or the Chiefs, one of those teams.
Well, that is why you want to get that right seed that deals with the AFC South.
Well, it's the 5 seed. It's the top wild card spot. And right now, Kansas City's got it. And if they can win out, that really...
There's 3 bye teams in the AFC. It's the 2 that are bye teams and the team dealing with this trash.
Whoa!
Well, you know what? Houston's a different team with Hoyer. And assuming he comes back, they don't know if he's going to be back next week. You know, Brian Hoyer... Brian Hoyer in a playoff game at home, they could pull off something.
We don't know that Hoyer's coming back, though.
No, we don't.
There are reports that he may be
banged up.
We don't.
Colts need to reboot. They have some materials to be an interesting team, but as Mark has pointed out and Dan has pointed out, it's a very boring team to watch this year. Mm.
They're not out of it, though. They're at Dolphins versus Titans. Depending on
reboot
which game they win, if they win the division game, you know, they might still get in, if because it wouldn't shock you if the Texans lost out here either.
It's just crazy that we're saying this about a team with Andrew Luck who will probably be in that playoff game when it comes around.
Is he coming back?
I don't know. At
we
this
don't
point,
know, but at this point, you could you, all you, these you'd have to roll like
fold.
A 20-sided dice to figure out which quarterbacks
fold
play
for
in
the season,
playoff game.
Honestly. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. NFC
Andrew Luck beat the Broncos when the Broncos hadn't lost a game yet.
That's fair, dog. Moving on, let's check in over at the NFC, where the Green Bay Packers played, you know, far from a perfect game in Oakland on Sunday, but they did enough. A 30-20 win that clinched a playoff berth and ended any hopes of the Raiders ending their long postseason drought. Greg Rosenthal, the Packers offense, still feels a little bit flawed to me, but the magic, this team didn't panic when things got a little hairy in the black hole. Gross.
I had a really hard time coming up with a big takeaway from this game. That was gross.
That was, I mean, our listeners have all, they're all on pause, so good luck for them hearing your point, Greg.
But they're, Wes is wild giggling like a little child.
Well, I don't blame him.
I was only half paying attention, and then I had to backtrack through the words when you said gross.
Yeah.
I don't have some huge takeaway from this game. There was nothing.
I do.
There was nothing that stood out. The thing that stood out to me was that Aaron Rodgers and the Packers team played their best the last 20 minutes after playing really a lousy first 40 minutes. They get a 14-0 lead because of two bad interceptions by Derek Carr. Packers really got outplayed for most of the game. Oakland comes back. But then Aaron Rodgers did what he does. He gets James Jones involved. They had a couple long drives. Their defense played well down the stretch. Julius Peppers played well enough, and they got a win that they needed to get. We were looking for them to stack some wins.
There's the key phrase in your recap. The Packers passing game was out of sync for much of the day.
Yeah.
We thought Mike McCarthy might be some magic elixir taking the play calling over again. Eddie Lacy doesn't do much on the ground.
Lacy was running like an offensive guard again, let's be honest. I mean, he's doing it again, a pitter-patter near the goal line, not moving quick. This guy, he must be driving crazy.
I know Mark Brady, who, you know, is one of our shadowy league figures, wants us to mention that the Packers are still in the hunt for the number two seed.
Did you just name a shadowy league figure by name?
Yes.
Okay, Valerie.
Risky business.
Yes. Well, I mean, we can talk about them still being eligible, but
he's not back here. I didn't realize we were starting to name names, though.
Hey, yeah. Look, the Cardinals are a much better team than the Packers. I'm sorry. I'm not worried about the Packers getting the number two seed.
Well, that's. I mean, are the Packers the most depressing team in the playoff picture considering what we thought they would be a couple months ago in the NFC, not the AFC?
Because they have Aaron Rodgers and because there's legitimate talent on that defense, they can still get it together. I know it's getting late. They did win this game on the road against a frisky team by 10. They're Julius Peppers, like I said, Mike Neal, the defense played pretty well overall. They could still get it together. It wouldn't shock anyone if Aaron Rodgers took out one of these teams like the Cardinals or the Panthers. It shouldn't anyway.
It would shock me if they beat the Panthers.
I don't view them as a depressing team, but I do think they'll be picked off in the NFC. I think going into the season, I thought this was their year. I think I picked them to win the Super Bowl. Who remembers anymore? But now they seem like the team. It's just a matter of time whether they're going to go to Arizona or they ended up facing the Seahawks. They'll get picked off because they're an inferior team when you get to that upper tier, that upper crust.
I think Rodgers played well in the second half, and it was in a driving rainstorm, which certainly did not help numbers. The other thing that stuck out was Amari Cooper. Still in the mix there for rookie of the year. You could make an argument.
Too many.
He went over 1,000 yards. Big game. Beat Demaryius Randle, another first-round pick up and down the field. But then he did have, like you said, Mark, one key drop that killed a late third-quarter drive. And just looking back, that was a key moment in the game because that's right when the Packers scored on three straight drives.
I think it's a three-man race for Offensive Rookie of the Year with Cooper, Winston, and Gurley.
I think that's true. I think Winston and Gurley are the leaders. But if Cooper had a monster couple games here down the stretch, he could too.
Greg, you're your biggest or greatest or worst black hole experience?
I'm not answering that question. I don't want Mark Brady to be mad at me.
Well, I've been to that stadium. If it is the stadium
you mean the
about.
Stadium?
What do you think I'm talking about?
I don't know.
I went to a Browns game there and was wearing a flannel shirt because I didn't want to be killed on the highway next to the, you know, the, where they
play. I've never been. I've never been. Have you? I've never been. And I may never go because this might have been the last, you know, we might be seeing the last of the Raiders.
That's true.
No one's really talking about
it. I'm glad you got that in. Should show some respect to the people of Oakland. But, you know,
no one thinks they're moving, though. That's the thing.
Yeah, I don't think they are. I don't buy it at all. And, you know, they also got the Warriors. So life's okay in the sports scene in Oakland right now. Let's move on. Seattle Seahawks. Marron. They keep rolling against the Browns. Another big day for Russell Wilson. A 30-13 win. Is that correct, Mark? I meant to double check that.
That is correct.
Thank you. Over Johnny Manziel and the Browns, the victory clinches another playoff berth for Pete Carroll's team. Mark, should the NFC be very afraid about what you're seeing with the Seattle Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, it mirrors what we've been talking about with Pittsburgh, where Seattle is going to roll in as some seed that, you know, whether you're Arizona or you're Carolina, you're going to have to deal with a Seahawks team that is peaking hard at the right time. And it starts with Russell Wilson, who he didn't have to do much today. Because even without Marshawn Lynch and without Thomas Rawls, they rolled up like 158 yards on the ground at will. And really, Russell Wilson still made a series of beautiful throws. You see one right there if you're watching YouTube. And his streak over the last month is historic in terms of its statistical nature. And they played a lesser opponent that I thought played hard for Mike Pettine today. But that really just wasn't enough. Johnny Manziel does not have enough weapons around him to hang with a team like this where... You know, with Seattle, it's role players right now. It's guys that are popping up at the right time. One guy goes down, someone else steps in, and this seemed like a very casual victory. Nothing really massive to note other than the fact that it was easy in nature for Seattle.
And it has a role player, a former role player who's now a star in Doug Baldwin. Anytime when the stat says only you and Jerry Rice have done something, you're a star. And that's what he is right now. He has as many touchdowns as any receiver.
Well, their offense is right there with the Steelers and whatever other offense you want to put right now in terms of peaking as one of the best offenses in the league. I would put the Panthers there too. They remind me a lot of the Panthers in that you don't think of them as an offensive team, but right now with the way those quarterbacks are playing, the yardage they're rolling up every week. I mean, the Panthers had 480 today. Seattle only punted once. They only had the ball 8 times. I watched this game pretty closely, too, because I was curious about our little sandwich thing. Don't think I forgot about that, Sessler, after our last show.
Well, you might as well tell him what it was.
Well, we talked about whether it would be a close game, and there was a certain barometer whether that would be true or not.
I lost.
It proved not to be true. They only punted once, and there was no turnovers. There was only 8 drives in the whole game, which is exceptionally low. I mean, that's amazing. Every drive was a success except for one for the Seahawks. Every time they got the ball, they went right down the field.
Yeah, and if you're Cleveland, I mean, they opened the game with a 7-minute drive where I thought it was the best drive they've had in months, and Manziel looked very capable, and he threw a touchdown pass to our boy Gary Barnage, but it fizzled out from there.
Gary?
That's right.
Gary Barnage had a touchdown.
He did.
I got 9 touchdowns this year. You said, I got 9 touchdowns. You're having a laugh.
I am not laughing. You're not laughing.
I have a laugh.
Ozzie Newsome either because he tied Ozzie Newsome.
I'm quiz in, mate.
Dan, I got something.
I'm quiz in.
Wait, what? That's Brandon behind the glass. What's up?
I would do it in an accent, but mine's not as good as yours.
Are you having a laugh?
Yeah, I am having a laugh. But you want to hear something that might make you laugh?
What?
Yeah, mate. You know what I mean?
Dan, this is Gary Barnage, and that is probably the worst British accent I've ever heard.
Oh, wow. Cheers to you, Gary.
If you're watching, if you're listening, you really should go to YouTube and check out the Brown Seahawks section, because Gary Barnage, live on video in an ugly sweater, calling out Hanses.
Well, can I see that again? Because I don't know if I believe it.
I believe.
Yeah, I think we can do that for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think he's faking the accent.
Dan, this is Gary Barnage, and that is probably the worst British accent I've ever heard.
I mean, Wes, he's from Kentucky. You hail from parts close by north of that.
I once delivered mail in Kentucky.
Sound like legit Kentucky accent to you?
That sounds much more Kentucky than, you know, East Liverpool or something.
That sounded phony to me. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know
if that was an
American accent. Props to Gary Barnage.
That's like a Handsome Hank downstairs. Whenever he tries to do an American accent, he's from London. It always sounds like somebody from Texas and a made-up person. I don't know if I buy that. But you know what? It was good to see Gary interact with the show. And part of the reason he did is all you listeners hitting up Gary Barnidge constantly when
I think he gets annoyed by that.
Yeah,
probably.
So maybe maybe leave him alone.
He didn't know about it though.
But he was cool about it, and he did tell one of our producers, David Singer, who helped set that up, that I get tweets all the time about, you know, something about a British accent or something. So I can only imagine how strange. I also asked to see if Gary could also try a British accent or maybe do his actual, the way he speaks. He said, I don't do accents.
Is there such a thing as a Twitter restraining order? Because one could be coming your way from a
Was Gary Barnidge calling you out a career lowlight or a highlight?
I would put it on the higher side. I mean, this guy could lead, he could lead the AFC in touchdowns for a tight end. He's having a nice little season.
He is. I mean, I think that's what's so weird about this game is you see Cleveland season, you see little moments where maybe it's coming together and you just wish they had Ed Manziel out there for longer because he needs more time. Not today.
I thought he looked mostly pretty good in this game. A lot of drops.
Yeah, we could get into that another time, but I think that it was up and down and there's just not enough around him.
Let us move on, guys. We will, and thank you, Gary Barnidge, for that, even if you're not telling the truth. The Minnesota Vikings didn't author a dominant performance against the Bears, but you know what? They didn't need to against a Chicago team that has been regressing since their Thanksgiving upset of the Packers. Teddy Bridgewater had 4 touchdowns on the day, just 3 incompletions, posted a passer rating north of 150, the most efficient game of his career. So this was the Bridgewater the Vikings were hoping to see more of this season. He entered this game, and I don't know if a lot of people have been tracking what Teddy Bridgewater's been doing this season, but he entered this game, and I think he started every game or close to it with 9 passing touchdowns. And I know that this is a team that's an Adrian Peterson. It's a run-first operation, but you've got to be a little more dynamic as a passer. So what they saw today, and him just putting the ball on the money all day, this is exactly what they need him to be, a little more dangerous with the ball in his hand, the ability to make plays, find Stephon Diggs, who hadn't scored in 6 weeks, had 2 touchdowns today. Adrian Peterson turned his ankle in this game, missed about a half a quarter and only finished with 63 yards. So on a day where Peterson was banged up and didn't have a big day, Teddy Bridgewater carried the offense, and because of that, at 9-5, the Vikings are almost certainly going to the postseason.
What I want to know about the Vikings offense is whether today is an aberration where suddenly everything went right for Teddy Bridgewater, or if it's another, it is actually the beginning of something where Bridgewater starts to show more development and we get more of these games down the stretch, which is not much longer, and next season, because this is clearly a step back for Bridgewater with Adrian Peterson on this offense. Am I wrong?
And yet it sort of doesn't matter right now if they can close strong, like you said, because we said, I think it started last week. I think that was Teddy Bridgewater's best game of the season. And I think they're off.
Yeah,
against the Cardinals. And I think they played well as a team overall. So that's 2 really positive performances for Bridgewater and the team to beat Chicago handily. This was not the type of game that they've been doing earlier in the season. Even when they were winning all those games, they weren't crushing opponents. So for them to take care of a Bears team at home and crush them, that makes you think, okay, they get that 6th seed. You never know. They can be a little frisky in that first game.
Yeah, especially if Bridgewater continues to grow. They could be a tough out. It's a tough conference. I mean, there's going to be some really good teams in the playoffs. But, yeah, if he's carrying his weight, they could be sneaky, especially if they get healthy on the defense.
Well, they can win the division. They can go to Green Bay and try to win that Week 17 game. They're not out of it.
Or they could, for the second time in a few years, play Green Bay in Week 17 and in the first round of the playoffs.
Solid chance that happens.
Is Joe Webb
They might
start?
Be a tough out.
It was Joe Webb.
Oh, my goodness.
They're going to have to deal with an absolute rugged matchup no matter how it shakes out. I mean, their road couldn't be any tougher, so we'll see what happens with this team.
In the adventures of head-scratching color guy talk, at one point, Adam Gase, who, you know, we've heard a lot of talk about the Bears offense coordinator Adam Gase and his future as maybe a hot coaching candidate. Mark, I know you're humored by all the Gase talk that happens a lot. John Lynch said today that whatever team hires Adam Gase, and he has to be the most attractive guy in the market, will have a coach for the next 12 years. I found that funny.
Well, that's ridiculous.
How could one project
95% of coaching hires don't go even 1/4 of that, so come on.
exactly. So, yeah.
Nicely said.
And I don't
know. Tell John Fox that.
And you must be, and Greg, I know you do not like John Fox. So seeing the finish line, you got to be feeling good.
That doesn't make me feel good. They've done a solid job this year. about what you'd expect.
Yeah.
Fox and Jeff Fisher are the co-presidents of the media kisses up to us because we forge relationships with them. And that's the part that I really don't like. They're probably nice people.
Bears are 5-9. I think we thought they could be, 1-13 right now.
Are you ready to talk about the sandwich situation? We'll take a little break here, Greg.
Yeah.
You went 0-9 today.
Well, one of those we've determined was I would have won because I didn't bet. I didn't say that the Patriots did not make the playoffs, but that's beside the point. Either way, I'm handing out sandwiches to the whole crew. We've kind of each taken turns being the sandwich.
This kills Greg. Don't let Greg think. Don't let it seem.
This really is why
he can't even do the picks with us anymore because this stuff means so much to him.
I can't
even lose 9 sandwiches in one day.
The sandwich thing is nonsense. You can't take too much pride or not in the sandwich thing. It's
Wes,
fun.
Do you buy that?
I don't believe a word of that.
Let's see what you lost
when
today.
It comes to predicting football, Greg takes a lot of pride in that.
So you lost.
Or doesn't participate.
Wait, what did he lose today? He lost the Rams will finish in first or second place in the NFC West. Was that clinched today?
He lost some sandwiches to me for Kirk Cousins.
Kirk Cousins, Austin Davis starts more games
than
Johnny Manziel.
It's also about the mid-third quarter of all these wagers coming up, so why don't we recap it at the end and just see what it's at?
Some are sealed.
You do care.
Yeah, let's change the topic, he's saying. Listen, I'm not saying this maliciously, but when gogetmylunch.org, an account run by Nick Fortier, when he tweets out that you went 0-9, that's noteworthy. And
he put you on blast.
That's pretty bad. I had the best sandwich record I had the best sandwich record going into this round, and I will no longer
And that's
have.
Coming from someone who's not keeping track.
Right, he doesn't care.
What else do we got?
Wes right now is 5-1.
Yeah.
Ooh. And yet you're right. We will dig
weird
in on this.
Reclaiming first place.
Well, half of them are still up in the air. That's
exactly. But right now, Sessler is 4-5.
I like that workmanlike.
Greg is 1-9. Ooh. I am 7-2.
1-9. That's like Dan Hansis's draft sandwich performance.
And like I said, as everyone knows, famously, I said when the regular season starts, that's when the old Zeuser starts winning
sandwiches.
You did
sandwiches. Say that.
That's what's happening here. Mm. And the Irishman, Brendan McGinnis, we will never forget you. He will lose 3 sandwiches. He said Tony Romo has more passing yards than Eli Manning. We'll dig into all that after the season. But if we ever see Brendan again, he'll be chomping.
He's under pressure now because our old producer Gold Standard has been on the Twitter lines with us and is actually from a distant country sending us sandwiches tomorrow. Not from a distant country, from a local place. He's in a distant country.
The Gold Standard.
A gentleman.
Called that for a reason.
Moving on, guys. So, yes, let's move on. The Chargers may have played their final game in San Diego on Sunday. If so, they went out a winner, a 30-14 victory over the dreadful Dolphins. Did you start Danny Woodhead in your fantasy playoffs? Anyone here going once, going twice? If so, congrats on your victory. 4 touchdowns for Danny Woodhead, and the Chargers roll.
Well, Andy Hageman, one of our writers and desk editors, went down to San Diego and talked with some of the season ticket holders, and she wrote a good piece just about what a sad day it is down in San Diego. A lot of emotions. She said it was almost like, just in their mind, going to a funeral. And so a lot of emotions, and you saw Phillip Rivers after the game getting choked up when he spoke to the media. You saw Eric Weddle and other players spending a lot of time with the fans and taking pictures after the game. Unlike in Oakland and St. Louis, there is a real palpable feeling this was it. And if nothing else, they went out with a big win, at least could have some fun in their last game.
Well, a funeral makes sense because both of these teams are a corpse at this point. But I feel for Chargers fans.
Wow.
Because this win doesn't have, it's not attached to more meaning. It would be great. We thought this Chargers team could do more this season after what McCoy had operated with over the last 2 years. And instead, it's a hollow way to go out in your old building. That said,
they gave their fans a memory.
We feel for the San Diego fans. It's not this side of the business. Having been a Browns fan that went through this, you feel powerless and you just don't know what's next.
The fans can not like what's going on at a higher level and with politics in the area, but they like the players, and it's
they
something.
They love Phillip Rivers.
Yeah, it gives them something to be happy about.
Rivers said after 12 years, he recollected Peyton Manning leaving Indianapolis and said, you kind of feel like the quarterback of the city. And that's what he said he feels, and that's where he started to get a little emotional.
The only way this move is a little bit less harsh is the fact that if you're in San Diego and they move to L.A., you can still get to a bunch of games. It's still in your region.
It's not your community anymore.
I'm not downsizing it at all, but I'm just saying.
It could almost be worse, though, too, in some level, like where it's, because there is an LA-San Diego, I wouldn't call it a rivalry, but they are very different places. And then to lose your team to the Los Angeles market, that's a kick.
No, we're not. It sucks, and we all think it sucks, but it's just like, it's, well, I don't know what you say at this point.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think it, the occasion calls for it.
Maybe there's something.
San Diego Superchargers. San Diego Superchargers. That just felt, I mean, it was important.
I mean, to be attached to an earphone when you sang that is a rugged way to go out.
What a tribute by you.
I mean, you think about...
That's like Whitney Houston, Star Spangled Banner, Dan Hansis, Chargers. They're right there for me.
You know, but listen, I don't bring the falsetto out often, but that is those are good people in San Diego, and well, they deserve a team.
They deserve the falsetto.
I could use a break. Like, if we could shut down the show and just, like, half
Mark,
hour reflect.
Host the rest of the show, Mark.
All right, next up, a huge matchup in Buffalo. Dan, take it from here. It actually was in Washington.
All right, that's what I needed to get back in the saddle. Yes, the Washington Redskins. Did we talk about this game?
No.
Well, I actually seamlessly led you outside of getting the stadium wrong into our next matchup.
Yeah, the Washington Redskins, they remain in the driver's seat in the NFC East. They knocked off the Bills 35-25 on Sunday. This was a game that eliminated Buffalo from playoff contention. Which is really sizzler. Christmas comes early when Rex gets his comeuppance against his new favorite team, the Redskins, and Kirk Cousins, who had another big day. Kirk Cousins shredding Rex's. Could you think of a better scenario for you, Mark, in another lost year in Cleveland, but in December, 5 days before Christmas, Cousins, your boy, shredding Rex and sending him home.
Well, I said, earlier in the week, I wanted to cover this game, and it delivered. It really delivered. I thought that, if you're on that side of the Kirk Cousins train where you feel like, it's not just some game manager. There are moments from Kirk Cousins where he looks like he could grow and develop into something more. This is your tape that you just want to put on loop over and over. And it has a lot to do with Jay Gruden today, who I think put pedal to the metal the entire time. Aggressive downfield passing. Jordan Reed, DeSean Jackson had the game of their lives. They came together. They fried this defense. It was an embarrassing showing. If you're a Bills fan, you're not going to forget what happened here. And I don't even know what Rex said after this game. There are no excuses
for this.
There
was a lot of talk in the locker room, the Bills locker room, after this game. I know Sammy Watkins spoke up among several other guys that clearly that people are very unhappy that this season got away from them, because I think they all thought if maybe they were coached better or they executed better that this was a playoff team, and obviously it's not meant to be.
Yeah.
Well, Mario Williams straight called out the coaching staff for too much substituting when the other team substituting late. So essentially saying they're calling defensive players off the field way too late after they see the offensive substitutions. There's a lot of confusion. Put it on the coaches. He also called out insurgents. This is the type of thing I think Mark would be excited about. He called out the insurgents in the Bills organization who are talking to our guy, Ian Rappaport, about his own future.
Insurgents.
Because Ian Rappaport, before Sunday, reported that Mario Williams was going to be on his way out, too big of a salary, this and that. And Williams did not like those insurgents.
Mm-hmm. Mm, not pretty. I mean, the Bills are
just
a
like
team
that
they've got a lot of talent, and especially on defense. If you had given Rex Ryan this offense back when he had the 2009-2010 Jets, they're in the Super Bowl.
Well, we keep saying that, this though, about the defense. This isn't that defense anymore. They're missing about three or four of their best six players.
Well, that's
just it's worth pointing out.
It's still
Rex
where
could
players
always coach
are not
up,
playing
and
up.
The, with the exception of last year when John Idzik sabotaged him completely, in my opinion. But that's what this season has been so strange, because he finally gets a quarterback, and Tyrod Taylor played poorly today, if I'm not mistaken.
Better down the stretch, but
and I know LeSean McCoy got hurt, so there's issues with this team. But in general, the fact that the offense actually did some things this season, it was the defense that let him down. And you've never heard in all the years Rex was in New York, and he was beloved in Baltimore as well. You never heard anyone complain about his scheme. So it's so strange to me that this would happen in Buffalo.
Although you look at Cleveland, and that scheme, which is in theory a mirror of this scheme, is getting fried, and there are similar complaints and whispers that it's too complex, it's overly complex for what it is, and it's not friendly for pass rushers. And so maybe the league catches, the league does catch up with stuff after a while. And either you adjust or everyone is going to adjust and start to crush you.
More disturbing to me is they're an unlikable team. And they have been all year. They talk too much.
Yep.
They run their mouths. And then they go out and commit penalties and don't back up anything they or their coach says.
And Mark, if you like this experience, how about I give you a little Christmas Eve present? Oh, no, wait. It's the day after Christmas. Even better. You're just, you know, you got all your presents. You've had a nice day. Turn on the old TV, watch Redskins-Eagles on Saturday Night Football on NFL Network. They win that game, it's about over, and the Redskins are going to the playoffs if they win that game.
Are you just starting to picture Jay Gruden at the podium?
Well, they're the favorites right now. They are the favorites.
Am I watching that game in my house, or am I watching that at work?
I can't see it.
Well, it's going to happen.
I know. I might have to be. Well, I have to see.
Well, we'll see. If they lose that game, it's wide open.
Well, you mentioned DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed. I mean, Kirk Cousins, and we said this earlier in the year, with all the injuries the Redskins had, he averaged 6.5 yards per attempt in the first seven games of the season. He's averaging 9 yards per attempt since Jackson and Reed got healthy over the last seven games.
I think Gruden's
giving some credit.
Give him credit, give Gruden credit, give the offense. I think they've done a really nice job with the offense.
15 touchdowns at home since his last pick, which is way back when. I mean, Cousins, the second half of his season has been what they needed, and they are right now the best team in this division. Because I can't trust the Giants.
Yeah.
And they get to prove it. Next week, you take care of business against the Eagles, and it's yours, basically.
Yeah, there's no... Yeah, that's the one thing. They have now put themselves in the position to take this thing. Now they just got it close.
It's the NFC, so there's no guarantee of that.
Yeah. All right. Which takes us to Sunday Night Football. The Arizona Cardinals traveling to Philadelphia to take on the Eagles with a chance to clinch the NFC West. It looked like a mismatch on paper, and that's exactly what it turned out to be. A 40-17 win for the Cardinals. A game where Carson Palmer has been doing MVP-like things all season. This was not about Carson Palmer on the offensive side of ball. It was David Johnson, who ran for 29 attempts, 187 yards, 3 touchdowns. Added 42 yards and 4 catches through the air. So a special career type of day for Johnson, who has really stepped in for Chris Johnson and has taken over that role. The Eagles, meanwhile, fall to 6-8, dire straits in the NFC East race. They need to win out, most likely, and get help at this point. The Cardinals, 12-2, knock the Seahawks off in the NFC West. Wes, you love this team. We love this team. They keep on pounding.
David Johnson was as impressive as any rookie performance all season. And we said when he went down, he could be an upgrade on Chris Johnson. And you saw the physicality. He had that 47-yard touchdown run that looked like something out of Marshawn Lynch's career. And then you also have Darren Fells dragging Byron Maxwell for 20 yards. The Cardinals were the more physical team in this game.
Yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, our boss is not here right now for this final segment of the night. He is not present. And that
is true
of the Eagles as well tonight. I mean, this is the third time in 5 games where they've given up 40-plus points on defense. And despite all the years of epic talk about Chip Kelly's innovative, crazy offense that no one can deal with, they don't have the offense or the players to keep up with this team when you're getting bombed this way.
All that's out the window. It's clear now, all the talk that Chip Kelly was this guy that was going to take the league by storm, and then people would be emulating what he was doing or imitating what he was doing. It's not going to happen, and it's certainly not – that's not going to be successful against a team like the Cardinals, who are as well-rounded as any group in the league right now.
Yeah, I mean, and forget Chip Kelly. Let's talk about the coach of the year in the NFC, and that's Bruce Arians, because no matter what's happened – or Ron Rivera, fair enough, but Arians, the argument for him is that no matter what's happened to Arizona the previous week, they get up for every single game. They've been the darlings of prime time this season. Big matchups – big critical situations, they show up, their offense is explosive and hard to contain. This had much more to do about Arizona than it did the Eagles.
They're 7-1 on the road this year, which proves they're mentally tough. It's a franchise record for them. And I love that Bruce Arians, after the game, they win the NFC West. And, Connor Orr, who's at this game, said Arians, basically the message he sent was there wasn't a whole lot of hooting and hollering. We won a lot more than the NFC West this year. We expect to go further.
The one thing to really be concerned about, and, we're taping this right after the game wraps up, is Tyrann Mathieu their star safety, cornerback, secondary man, went down with a knee injury at the very end of the game. Arians didn't really have a comment on it directly after the game, so we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But that's one of those guys, one of the core players on this team, they could afford to lose less.
I mean, more than just a core player, he's an NFL Defensive Player of the Year candidate, and outside of J.J. Watt, he would get my vote. And so it's really impossible to describe what losing him for any amount of time would mean, not only for the secondary, but what they do as a defense as a whole.
He's like no other defensive back in the NFL. He plays a slot corner, safety, and a little bit of linebacker at times, too. He's a blitzer and a run defender. They use him to cover tight ends. There's just no one else like that. And Carson Palmer this week compared him to a mix between Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. Praise doesn't get any higher than that.
Do you guys want to know what Drew Stanton and DeMarco Murray had in common tonight?
They both touched the ball once.
They were both credited with two rushing attempts. Drew Stanton, two kneel downs to kill the clock at the end of the game. DeMarco Murray, two carries for 3 yards. He was obviously third in the pecking order. So this seems like they're heading toward a divorce at this point, DeMarco Murray and the Eagles, which is certainly incredible. It's easy to forget now because we're now almost all the way through the 2015 season. He is the reigning NFL rushing champion, has no part in their offensive attack. That goes on everyone on Philly. They botch that as bad as it gets. So the Eagles, when you look at all the things that have gone wrong for them, that's a big part of it. Bad job signing that guy.
The offensive player of the year last year, and now he's an afterthought, like you said. And I think that's just, I've made this point several times, it's the perils of building your team through free agency, which they did. Chip Kelly knows that running backs with DeMarco Murray's workload do not play well next year. He admitted that in August, and yet they still signed him to a big money deal.
It's crazy. So, yes, the Cardinals are 12-2. The team around the NFL is now the NFC West champions with a very good chance. Probably not going to get the one seed, but they have a good chance now to lock up that two seed and roll into the playoffs. Got to like the chances of the team of ATN. If they win the Super Bowl as a team of ATN, we should just fold up shop because we've done it.
Well, at that point, absolutely. There's nothing left for us to do if that happens.
I like that.
I like their chances. We have to hope that Honey Badger's injury is like a Gronk deal where he's only going to miss a week or so. It's possible. We'll see.
Or he might not miss any time. Yeah, it's too early to say. Let's just hope that's what it is. But, yeah, so there is the look, the in-depth look, at the NFL, the day that was December 20th, 2015, Mark. We will be back on Tuesday with our, you know, it's Christmas week, but we will make sure, as we always do, it's going to be a three-show week. We'll have a show on Tuesday. We'll have another show we'll put together on Wednesday because we love you, audience.
And maybe we broadcast for like 10 or 12, 14 hours on Christmas Day. Why not?
It's an interesting thought.
Maybe it's like a shout out to Balboa, what he did in Moscow on Christmas Day once upon a time against
Ivan Drago. Yes, the parallels are there.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so that's it. Thank you again for listening and watching on YouTube. If you want to see what we look like, if you want to see what Gary Barnage looks like humiliating me by pretending to have an American accent, I'm offended. You can do that. Check out YouTube also on NFL Now. That's it. This is Dan Hansis. Signing off for Quiet Storm. The mailman in absentia, the boss, Greg Rosenthal, and Brandy behind the glass. Till Tuesday.
Hey, what's up? This is Nate Burleson.
I'm Real Mike Rob.
Hey, ATO.
Yeah, check out the R&B podcast. Go to NFL.com/podcast. All right, come on. One more time.
No, T.O. said it. He just said it. It's a wrap.
All right.
That was perfect.
I'm messing up sometimes.